Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Okay, so let's talk about the 2016 election in a slightly different way now. Here's a piece of tape that's actually familiar to most adults, but when you listen this time, imagine that you're a child, a six-year-old listening to the tape. Okay, here it is.
We are going to make America great again. We're going to start winning. We're going to put America first.
Of course, that was the Republican nominee Donald Trump just speaking at a rally in Wilmington, North Carolina yesterday. But remember, you were listening to this piece of tape with the ears and the mind of a six-year-old. So what did your six-year-old self hear when Donald Trump spoke? Personality? Patriotism? Victory? What was it that you heard? Well, our next guest has a six-year-old son who was enthralled with Donald Trump. And then his family started talking about what this election means, and things changed. Kirsten Greenidge is an Obie Award-winning professor of playwriting at Boston University, and her article, How My Son Fell Out of Love with Donald Trump, appeared in Politico magazine, and she joins us now from Westboro. Kirsten, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
It's really great to have you back, and I have to say, your article in Politico about the complex navigation that you went through with your son really, really touched me. Can you first just tell us briefly how it is that you first discovered that your son, you know, was kind of a Donald Trump fan?
Well, I picked him up from school one day, and a teacher came up to me. It was not his own teacher. A teacher from an older grade came up to me and said, you know, your son has been talking about Donald Trump, and I just thought you might want to know because he's really excited about him. And, you know, a teacher comes up to you and talks to you about your son, who is not your own teacher at the end of school, usually your first reaction is, oh, my goodness, what am I kidding?
Yeah, this is trouble.
I didn't really know that he was this excited about Donald Trump, and on the way home from school, we started talking about Donald Trump, and it occurred to me that he really didn't know what else Donald Trump was talking about except for that phrase, make America great again, because he was just like, well, that's what he wants to do is make America great again, and my husband and I do talk to him about current events, but we also are big proponents of that our kids should make up their own minds.
Right. Well, Kirsten, let me just ask you if I can jump in here for a second. So, I mean, did your son tell you a little bit more about, even if it had just been limited to that phrase, make America great again, what did he love about it? Why did he get so excited about it?
I think he was just excited that was going to happen. My son also grew up, you know, under Obama. That's the only president he's ever known. And so I don't think he thought of it as that we've had, you know, eight terrible years. I think he just thought this is going to be a great continuation of what we've had.
Yeah, because who doesn't like winning, really? I mean, and I don't say that with any facetiousness at all. To the ears of a six-year-old, the idea of greatness and winning, it just seems like a thing to naturally get excited about. But then you were mentioning the car ride home. Things changed a little bit. How did you take the next step to tell your son, well, you know, there's a larger context here?
Well, I started asking him some questions, and it became clear that, first of all, he said, when I said, do you know, was asking him about Donald Trump, he did say, who's Donald Trump? Because he'd never heard the two names put together. And then I realized, oh, right, this is, he'd been learning about much of the election through sound bites, and it wasn't necessarily because we were keeping the election from him. You know, he goes to bed at 7:30. We don't necessarily watch the news together. It became a conversation about, okay, let's get to the bottom of what the candidates stand for. Because at that point, we were thick in primary season, and there were many candidates. It wasn't just Donald Trump running. And so he wanted to know more about all of them. Mm-hmm. And he also had some vague memories of the 2012 election. And so every Tuesday to him was election night. And he was just confused also about what primaries were.
Right.
And we had some discussions about what Donald Trump stood for and what that phrase could mean to different people.
And so then there's a moment in you that you write in your Politico magazine article where you know, you're having this conversation with your son, and you say you were like looking in the rearview mirror, and you could see that his whole body language changed, right? That he had his knees up under his chin, and he kind of was just looking around without as much certainty as he had before. And he said something to you that really got me. He said, he said to you that all of a sudden he felt embarrassed.
Yes, he felt embarrassed because he didn't know these things.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know what that phrase could mean. He felt he didn't know about the candidates. He didn't know about the primary season. He went from, yes, America could be great again. Look at this great thing that I found and I've been touting around school, to feeling like disempowered.
Yeah.
And he just kind of curled into himself in the car seat as much as you can in a car seat.
Yeah.
And we had a lot. We condensed a lot of the primary season as far as we'd gotten into the car ride to chess class.
Well, Kirsten, stand by here for just a second, because I want to introduce another voice into this conversation, because this is at the point where, I mean, your son's change in his reaction had to do with everything that you were just saying, that you had opened his eyes to the broader context of all that's going on in the election. And I think this is exactly the challenge that many parents face, regardless of their political persuasion. So listeners, we're speaking with Kirsten Greenidge. She's a professor of playwriting at Boston University, and she's written an article for Politico magazine titled "How My 6-Year-Old Son Fell Out of Love with Trump." We've got a link to it at our website, radioboston.org. And there's a passage in Kirsten's piece where she asks all readers, how do you discuss the electoral process with a 6- and 8-year-old when the conversation is able to veer in so many different directions? How do you streamline discussions about democracy for the very young when the sound bites are about throwing chairs and adults behaving badly? Well, to help us answer that question, we've got Joseph Schrand here in the studio with us. He's an assistant child psychiatrist at Mass General Hospital and an instructor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. He's also chief of adolescent psychiatry for High Point Treatment Centers. Dr. Schrand, welcome back to Radio Boston.
It's delightful to be here. And hello, Kirsten.
Nice
to meet you. Great article. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Well, so tell me, I mean, I think Kirsten, in her piece, asks exactly the question, how do you talk about this democratic process that we're all going through with the very young, when so much of the political language we're hearing from all sides is maybe not in the highest tradition of our democracy?
You know, it's great that people are asking this question, and I'm not sure we would have asked this question in the last election. So something's going on here where people are recognizing there's something very important going on. In the previous part on WBUR, you were interviewing Meryl Streep. And I'm going to bring this in because in Meryl Streep, she was talking about Into the Woods by Sondheim. And Sondheim, in that musical, has a great song, "Children Will Listen."
Mm-hmm.
Careful the things you say, because children will listen. So they're listening. And how cool is that, that the kids are listening? So what do? Just like Kristen did, we want to know what our kids are thinking. So before we say, this is what's happening, why don't we find out what they think?
Uh-huh.
Tell me, one of the first questions would be, what is a president meant to do? Tell me, you know, and we've got these people, you know who's running for president? That's right, right? These are the people running for president. What do you think a president is meant to do?
Yeah.
And then from there you build and you can find out what they know about the candidates.
Well, Kirsten, I mean, you asked those kinds of questions to your son. How did he answer?
At that point, he answered in a 68. I mean, he's faced a lot of confusion at that point. What's wonderful about him is that he's extremely verbal. And so I think what happened in that car ride was that he and I were able to enter into a lot of questions together. And so I was able to ask him questions, and he was able to answer and also ask me questions. What was interesting is also watching his sister, who is a different type of child too.
Mm-hmm.
And her eyes got really big, and it was kind of like, who's going to step in it now?
Yeah.
What am I going to answer wrong? So I would love to be able to ask those questions of both of them. I probably will this evening, and see what they say.
Well, Kirsten, let me just jump in here, because later on, in months later, you wrote in the article that there was a point at which your son began to realize that, you know, the president of the United States, whomever that might be, has enormous power, and that that power, as you write, quote, could be chosen to be exercised in a way that could have real consequences, not for someone who is nameless or faceless, but for himself, and that to be 6 years old and understand that must be terrifying. And we just received a comment on Facebook from Amanda Ferry, who says, my daughter, who's 10, has Hispanic, African-American, and Muslim friends, and she is worried about what will happen to them if Donald Trump gets elected. So, I mean, I imagine that there are people on the other side of the aisle who perhaps have those same concerns about their child if Hillary Clinton gets elected. But Joseph Schrand, I mean, those sort of existential terms are how this election is being discussed, even amongst adults. Kids are absorbing that. Like, how do we talk to them about that?
How do we help a kid remember they're part of a group? Because that's really what it is. We feel safer when we're part of a group. And what these comments are saying is that, wait a second, what if I'm not in the in-group? And that's part of what the author was saying here, is that Trump is able to make you feel included by these pithy little catchy sayings. But when you really think about it, there are so many people being excluded. That's what kids are afraid of. They're afraid that they're going to be kicked out of the group, just like they were on a playground and not being invited to play. That's what we worry about. So how do we help a kid solve that problem? By reminding them that we're one group. We are all Americans. We're all part of a global community. That's where we really need to go. It's very big stuff for a kid. I mean, it's really remarkable that a six-year-old is thinking this way, and that's to your credit, mother there, and father. But these kids are thinking, how do we help them feel safer? Because that's really what it is. It's not about America being great again. It's about we are all part of America.
Hmm. Well, Kirsten Greenidge, another aspect that really flowed around, or a thought that flowed through your entire article was, our kids, is a six-year-old, is an eight-year-old too young to watch the news, to have discussions about the news? I mean, with your experience with your son, where do you come down on that now?
I come down to, we had in those days after the initial discussion of Make America Great Again, because what he was asking me, what he's demanding actually was, tell me everything. I want to know everything. I want to watch the news. I want to listen to the news. I want you to put it on the radio. I want to read it. Everything. And my gut reaction was, no, absolutely not. And which is interesting, because I grew up, my parents didn't have a filter at all. I grew up watching everything they watched on TV. I watched the nightly news and everything. And it's probably one of the reasons why I became a playwright, which I wouldn't give up for the world. So we do, I'm much less reactionary when sound bites come on the radio. I'm much less apt to turn it off or down now. And much more willing to enter a conversation with him and discuss with him, which I thought I was doing before, because I live in Cambridge, or they go to school in Cambridge, and so I thought I was doing that before, and I really the winter proved that to me that I was not.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm much more willing, even though it is very difficult, and we end up into some conversations where I feel like, as a parent, I don't know the answers, or I don't know how to answer things, and we get into some topics where I'm just like, oh, wow, this seems like it's above his head.
Yeah.
But he appreciates being part of the conversation.
Joseph Schrand is nodding. You're nodding your head yes.
Yeah, yeah. Because, again, what's wonderful is we meet our children where they are, and sometimes kids will really fool us, and they think that they absolutely know what's going on. I mean, there's that, not to put teenagers down, but there's that great, you know, bumper sticker, hire a teenager, they know everything. But kids want to know, and the fact that your son was embarrassed is not insignificant. something was going on where he felt that other people were judging him a certain way. And he didn't expect that. I'm not, you know, doing the shrinky thing, but that's where kids are at. I think part of it is by having a discussion with kids where they're at, great things happen. It's more interesting to know what our kids are thinking. But there are certain principles that we want. We want our kids to be kind, to be generous, to include other people, to feel that they can give something, to persevere.
How do we do that, though, with the political conversation being what it is in August 2016, whereas we were talking about earlier, the forces seem to be towards exclusion, not inclusion, and not, you know, citizenship?
I think we got to bring it down to the playground level in many ways. You know, if you're talking about Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton and you're sort of examining their political points of view from a six-year-old perspective, I think you can ask someone like, well, which one seems, you know, like they would be a part of your class? Are there kids in your classroom who they remind you of? Are there, and you don't want to necessarily push them down the bully road or something like that, but you can certainly say, what do you think about Donald Trump when he says this? Did you know that he said this? What do you think he means when he says this, this, and this? Mm-hmm. Get their opinion.
Yeah. Well, we're fast running out of time here, but Kirsten, last question to you. How are the, well, I guess we're in summer, right? So maybe there aren't so many car rides home. But how are the equivalent car rides now with you and your two kids?
They're great. I mean, there's actually a lot of car rides because there's less school, so we're together a lot. And the political discourse has ramped up. We did watch some of the conventions together, and it has been interesting. It has been a crash course in democracy and watching both conventions. We've had discussions about what conventions do, what they mean to each candidate, and I think the kids are enjoying it and also a little bit wary of the democratic process in a way that I think their grandparents were very much committed to the democratic process and voting rights would be enamored of and might be slightly worried about. Yeah. But we've had many great discussions about what it means to exercise your vote to choose who your elected officials are.
Yeah, so keep talking. That's the lesson I'm gathering from both of you. Well, Kirsten Greenidge is a professor of playwriting at Boston University. She's an Obie Award-winning playwright of several plays, most recently Milk Like Sugar and The Luck of the Irish. Kirsten, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Joseph Schrand is an assistant child psychiatrist at MGH and an instructor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. He's also chief of adolescent psychiatry for High Point Treatment Centers. Dr. Schrand, it was great to have you as well.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And let us know how you're talking to your kids about election 2016. Send us a comment at our website, radioboston.org. We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.